Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you heard you can listen to your favorite news podcasts ad-free? Good news. With Amazon Music, you have access to the largest catalog of ad-free top podcasts included with your Prime membership. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or visit amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free and catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Sure you've heard from various sources, Joe Biden is ruining Thanksgiving. That's right. Joe Biden is destroying Thanksgiving, according to my right-wing red hat friends. Former Iowa Republican Jason Chaffetz was on the F channel saying that he wanted to go buy a turkey today. And he went and he bought one, $90. He said $90 for a turkey. And he says it's all a choice by Joe Biden. Joe Biden made him pay $90 for a turkey. Now, what's interesting, and I love this, because the Twitters had a little bit of fun with Jason Chaffetz today, because Jason tweeted out a picture of, the only way I can describe it is, it's a gated community woke turkey. Raised in California from you know, tiny thing, bottle fed with the finest in European cuisine. How did the picture go? 100% vegetarian fed, raised without antibiotics, no preservatives or artificial ingredients, minimally processed, and no gluten. This is the turkey. This is the tender and juicy with old-fashioned flavors, supposedly. Thoughtfully raised on sustainable family farms. And this is the gated community woke turkey that he tweeted out. Because only rich people can afford $4.99 a pound for this specific kind of turkey. And look, he went looking for the most outrageously priced. Again, it's about the messaging. And it's about the outrage. It's about, you know, getting you, yeah, turkey's more expensive. And it is. Not more than it was last year. It's actually down from last year, but it is up from over the pandemic. Now, you go, could the far right and Fox News, could the news cycle get any dumber? And the answer is yes. Just tune in tomorrow, and I'm sure they will have more outrage candy for you. And again, never mind the facts that the prices are coming down because of Biden's policies. But here's the thing. They don't want you to think like that. They're betting all of their marbles on you're going to be angry about paying more at the grocery store, and you're going to blame Biden for doing it. Not corporate America. No. Not the people who have been robbing you blind our entire lives. No, it's not them. It's Joe Biden. the guy who has the least amount of control over the prices at the supermarket. Let's blame him. Now, it's interesting. I then saw this, you know, gated community, woke turkey, because again, 100% vegetarian fed. That's not something Republicans are supposed to want. They want, you know, what I'm told is, you know, they want, you know, the, you know, the good old fashioned American turkey that we can fry in a deep fryer. That's the Republican line. Not this, you know, hand-suckled kind of, you know, groomed turkey, 100% vegetarian fed. No, no, that's not what the Republican folk want. Now, I did find it interesting. Costco, I looked to Costco. Costco has, they've got an entire cooked, pre-made turkey dinner, complete with half a boneless turkey breast, Yukon Gold mashed potatoes, cranberry sauce, fresh vegetables, poultry gravy, and herbed stuffing. All of that, $3.99 a pound. Not the $4.99 for the gated community woke turkey. No, no. And they've cooked it for you at $3.99 a pound. And customers there are not all too pleased because that's still too much. And this is where I keep coming back to. You know, it's about the outrage. People have to be mad about something. And the thing that gets me is all of this is happening as Republicans have harmed families by gutting the child tax credit. Now, remember, we have more than doubled child poverty in this country because Republicans refused to extend the child tax credit. That literally put food on the table. That's the thing that gets me. And you just go, when will we wake up? They are now actively seeking to gut food stamps. They're now actively seeking to go after Social Security. Again, making hunger and poverty worse. But it's not about policy. Understand, Republicans, and I've been saying this for the longest time, it's not about policy because they don't have any. There's nothing in the Republican platform. Well, wait a second. They didn't have a platform in the last presidential election. So there's nothing in the platform before there was no platform that's going to help working people. Because I say it all the time, Republicans hate working people. Look at what they do. Bob Casey, Senator from Pennsylvania, he's got a report out. We talked about his greedflation report a couple of weeks ago. He's got another one, another greedflation report titled Stuffing Their Pockets. You know, big food and agriculture business are making your holiday meals more expensive. And look, they are. And he reports that, you know, while turkey prices have fallen this year, families are still paying higher prices than they did in 2020. Prices for other holiday meal staples like pork, chicken, potatoes rising faster than the headline inflation, earning companies billions and costing consumers as well. He puts out a report that goes into agribusiness companies that, you know, process our foods. Their bottom lines, and I've been saying this for months now, years actually, look at the earnings reports. Look at how much they're profiting off of us. He also says that these same companies have a history of engaging in price fixing, colluding to raise prices, anti-competitive conduct, and touting their ability to raise prices without limit. Now, I go, great, Bob. I love it. Finally, a senator may be thinking about what I've been talking about since the quote-unquote end of the pandemic as inflation was skyrocketing. Maybe we should have, I don't know, a Senate commission looking into the gouging. Maybe we should have a senator like Bob Casey out there holding these CEOs accountable. Because understand, Pilgrim's Pride, the second largest chicken producer, Bob in his report points out their net revenue increased by 53% from just 3 years ago. And who pocketed that? Oh yeah, the CEOs and the shareholders. Who paid it? You did. Smithfield, the largest pork producer in this country, which, by the way, is owned by a Chinese company, made $1 billion in 2021. And that wasn't enough. In 2022, saw their profits grow by 34% to $1.4 billion. Who paid that? That's right, you did. I know this is Biden's fault. Biden's fault. Because Biden has a switch that he can just flip in the Oval Office to go, hey, CEOs, raise prices. Potato prices. Everyone loves potatoes, mashed potatoes, scalloped potatoes, chopped up potatoes, French fried potato. Oh, love it. The price of potatoes, 60% over last year. And you go, how's that possible? Well, Lamb Weston Holdings, the largest frozen potato provider in the U.S., they just reported in their most recent quarter 111% net income increase compared to last year. And what did their CEO say was the cause of this? What did the CEO attribute to this massive soaring profit? Well, quote, the carryover benefit of pricing actions initiated last year. In regular speak, in working people speak, they raised prices. They raised prices on you and me. They're gouging us. This is a massive redistribution of wealth. But Jason Chaffetz, with his gated community woke turkey, it's all Biden's fault. It's all Biden's fault. Biden did this. And understand, what we're going to hear over the next several months is Republicans continually putting the inflation at Joe Biden's feet, when the reality is this has everything to do with the pandemic, has everything to do with shutting the economy down and then flipping it back on as people had more money to go into the marketplace with. I know, Joe Biden gave them more money. Which is ludicrous, because Bob Casey also talks about the fact that the first year of the pandemic, after the end of the pandemic, Biden's first year there, the inflation that skyrocketed, all of it attributed to corporate America. All of it. And again, the biggest massive redistribution of wealth in my lifetime from working people to corporatists and CEOs and shareholders and the very wealthy. And what I don't understand is why we're not losing our minds. Why we're not angry over the fact that we've got a Republican Party that more than doubled childhood poverty because they refused to allow the child tax credit to continue, are right now seeking to gut food stamp programs and go after granny and Social Security. And somehow this is how we're going to fight inflation off of kicking the poor when they're down. But yeah, that's it. That is their plan. We're going to lower wages. We're going to go after those workers. We're going to crush those unions, because you know those wage increases, they're going to cut into profits. They are going to cut into profits, and we can't have that, because profits, they are sacrosanct. Now, there's the other part of this that, you know, Jason Chaffetz got me thinking about with his gated community woke turkey. At $4.99 a pound, raised in California, vegan, 100% vegan raised turkey. Brings me to the point of sustainable farming, of a food supply system that is not corporate dominated. Maybe Republicans, maybe Jason Chaffetz, what you should be complaining about, what you should be losing your ever-loving freaking mind over, is the kind of consolidation that you have championed, that you have allowed to happen in this country, that's given these companies outweighed power to raise prices whenever they feel like it. There is no competition in our marketplace when you have a handful of companies controlling every industry. And it's getting worse. Things are getting more consolidated. And I keep going, I visited the inaugural site of Teddy Roosevelt. And I'm going, who is going to be this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? Will it be Bob Casey? Will these reports be the beginning of Bob Casey going, you know what, we got to break some of this stuff up. There's no competition in these industries. And oh, by the way, should we have Chinese companies owning a large portion of our food supply? Should that be happening? Maybe we should be having another conversation. Again, what I think Joe Biden is actually doing. And this is what's got all of those people freaking out from inside the Democratic Party and out. They like neoliberalism. They like corporate dominance. Maybe that's the conversation we should be having. You know, if turkeys are $4.99 a pound, we should find out if it is a gated community woke turkey, which I understand that's highly labor intensive. You got to pay someone with a bottle to feed them by hand and, you know, keep them, cuddle them at night to keep them warm. I get it. But for the rest of us who can't afford the gated community woke turkeys, maybe we have a competitive market that allows people to enter the market, to produce what we need locally. Maybe not have one giant factory. Maybe do some sustainable things right here at home, in our backyards. Just my thought. Want to hear yours? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So from Bob Casey's report, for the average Pennsylvania family, costs have gone up $3,194 in 2021 and $3,546 in 2022, thanks to corporate profiteering. That's the number that Casey's report has come up with, and they've got the facts to back it up in it. I suggest people take a look at this stuff. You can Google it. It's titled Stuffed. I love the title, and I wish Democrats would do more of this. Greedflation reports stuffing their pockets, how big food and agricultural businesses are making your holiday meals more expensive. We'll get links out on social media. Let's quick go to the phones. We got Steve on line one in Chicago. Steve, how are you today, buddy?
I'm fine, thank you. And so you've touched on a number of things here. And what happened during COVID was that, you know, there was a massive discussion with regard to inflation. For obvious reasons, and because that narrative was so pervasive, you know, the private sector caught on to that and said, hey, you know what, if X used to be a dollar and now inflation has driven it to $1.20, well, heck, who's going to know the difference if we take it up another 20 cents and make it $1.40 even? Well, they're all bombarded with the same messages that everything's skyrocketing. So, you know, who's going to know that, you know, half of the increase is actually us just gouging them?
Yep.
And that's exactly what they did. And so, you know, I mean, there's organic inflation that came out of that sort of thing. I mean, you know, when you have supply chain issues, obviously there's going to be a problem. There's going to be less goods. There's going to be more people chasing them. As we came out of the pandemic, you had all of this pent-up demand. So especially if you're middle, upper middle class, there was over $1 trillion that all of a sudden exploded into the marketplace of people wanting things coming out of the pandemic. Well, for obvious reasons, less things, more money. Okay, things are going to go up because obviously you're going to sell to the person who's willing to pay you the most. You're going to charge the most. Understandable. But this is something different than what we're talking about here in terms of gouging people and just artificially inflating the prices because you can. Because the rest of the market, because it's a small market of people, of suppliers on a lot of these things, and hey, a couple of other companies are charging outrageous prices, so can we. And that's the reality. And unfortunately, it only goes one way when we have this discussion. Anything that, you know, can harm the Democratic Party or Joe Biden. Today, when they had this discussion, they do this almost every year, about what Thanksgiving is going to cost you. And it turns out, you know, the Fox was covering this as well. And when they got to that part of the press conference where, hey, you know what, this turns out to be the fourth least expensive Thanksgiving in relative to income in America. And like, oh, Fox cut away from that because, oh, God forbid that, you know, Americans should start to realize that, you know what, inflation is getting better. It's not as bad as it was 2 years ago and last year. And, yes, we are moving in the right direction. We're not there yet. But, you know, we are, again, no one wants to admit that going into 2024, God forbid, that, you know, things should start to look better than they did. Because, you know, then you're forced to give Biden credit, and that's the last thing they want to do. So, yeah, you know, it's the same old narrative. And, you know, the only thing you can think to take away from this, as you pointed out, with regard to the child tax credit and so many other things is, you know, when we extended that during COVID, when we gave people, sent people money and gave them some additional benefits, you know, government actually doing something to help people. Yeah, the fear among conservatives in this country wasn't so much that money was going to go out. They didn't like that, but a lot of their constituents got it as well. It's that God forbid that Americans should recognize that, you know what, government can help us. Government can help people who are in need of health care. And that's why we extended Medicaid. Government can help to actually send money to people so that they don't starve and can help pay their bills. You know, the government can do a lot of things. And then what happened? Americans get used to it in the same way that we got used to, oh, I don't know, the Affordable Care Act. The Republicans were scared to death of it. Now, who on the right is running against the Affordable Care Act or the provisions within the Affordable Care Act? Nobody. Because exactly what they feared happened. Americans came to like it, came to embrace it, and you'd have to be an idiot if you were a Republican to run against that today. So, you know, this is what they're fearful. They're fearful that we're going to become like Western Europe because, you know, there's nobody in the streets in Western Europe demanding our educational system, our social welfare system, our health care system. Nobody. No protest movement. Nobody's saying, you know what, we need a giant free market reform in Western Europe because that would make us all better off. Those don't exist. There's a reason why.
Yeah. No, and you brought up, you know, you'd have to be an idiot. And I immediately I thought back to Dwight Eisenhower and his letter to his brother Edgar. He said, you know, anybody who would come out against labor unions, unemployment, Social Security, the Farm Bill, they wouldn't be heard from in our history. But there are a few, you know, Texas oil millionaires and that, but their numbers are negligible and they are stupid. But I've been saying for a while, as stupid as running the Republican Party right now.
Oh, yeah, that's exactly what they're hoping to do in terms of framing this stuff. So it's got to be that the things that the Republican Party is responsible for that are harming you in your life, we've got to deflect that and turn it into Democrats created that for you.
Yep.
I mean, you know, no matter how we do, because let's face it, there are a lot of really stupid voters in the Republican Party. I'm not saying that Democrats don't have their share, but relative to Republicans, doesn't even come close. I mean, you know, whatever narrative, you can tune on to some of the social media sites and find people, Gordon Kepler and others, who love to, you know, have fun with this. They'll go to some Trump rally, whatever, and they'll ask these people these questions, and they're like, it'll turn out, well, you do know that that's the Republican position that you're against.
Right.
they're just dumbfounded. You know, because, again, they've been fed this nonsense, and they really don't understand how it is that they're there in opposition to something that benefits them and which Democrats support, which would benefit them. But, no, you know, like I said, it's just, you know, they've been lied to. They regurgitate the lie because they live in an echo chamber. If you listen to Fox all day, you wouldn't know any better.
That's true.
I can't really blame some of them, you know.
Right there with you, Steve.
You just don't know any better.
I'm right there. Appreciate it, man. Thanks so much.
Take care.
As always, good stuff. And look, you know, we talked about Nebraska, you know, pursuing paid sick days and, you know, a solidly red state that their legislature had voted down numerous times. You got citizens out there pushing for a ballot initiative. I'm right there with you. But here's the thing. Just today, lawsuit, General Mills and Nestle. Evidently, a jury in Illinois decided that those two companies have been overpaying for eggs for years. Evidently, the nation's largest producers and two trade groups evidently have been found to have conspired to restrict the supply. The Bloomberg article says a U.S. District Court in Northern District of Illinois, a jury of 9 men, 3 women, said the two largest egg producers, Calmain Foods Incorporated and Rose Acre Farms, along with two industry trade groups, will have to pay damages to the food companies. The jury is going to decide this at the end of the month, I guess. The case came out in favor of the food producers, obviously. The lawyer, this is my part, this is the part that I love the most. The lawyer, a guy named Brandon Fox of Jenner and Block Partners, said, "We're incredibly pleased by the jury's decision. For the first time, the defendants have been held liable for their antitrust violations. We are now going to turn our attention to the damages phase." The damages phase. The producers are going to get damages. They got cheated. Question. What about you and me? You and me, we get nothing. You know who gets zip out of this? Us. Now, the companies, they're going to do fine. They're going to get damages. Does that trickle down to the consumers who have been gouged? To the consumers who have been harmed through higher prices? And where are our antitrust champions in this day and age to hold these companies accountable. Where are they? Where are the folks who are going to go after these companies and these CEOs? And again, you know when this was? This was back in 2004 through 2008. This lawsuit was filed in 11. So gouging, not something new. Price fixing, not something new. Collusion, not something new. Screwing consumers, well, that's the order of the day. When do we get our decision? That's the question. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, Rick at TheRickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Minnesota Representative Dean Phillips. I love Dean Phillips. He's running for president. He's got a new super PAC. He's got a whole bunch of stuff. Evidently, he has released some attack ads on Biden and Biden's electability. Have you heard? You know, Joe Biden's old. Maybe you've heard. You know, he turned 81 the other day. He's old. Maybe you heard that. I don't know. Maybe you heard Joe Biden's old, because that seems to be the narrative that the right keeps pushing. And oh, by the way, Dean Phillips as well. And maybe here to share some thoughts on, is he right? Is it possible? I don't know. But that's why I've asked our good friend, former Alabama Senator Doug Jones, to share some thoughts. Doug, thanks for taking time for us.
Always great to be with you, Rick. I hope all your listeners have a great Thanksgiving coming up.
I hope so as well. So have you heard? Joe Biden's old.
You know, that was mentioned the other day in some birthday posts that I saw. I'm just shocked. I mean, the guy that I've been around, you know, he's ready to roll. He's outworking everybody.
And this is what I say. Look, I don't care if the guy can't get a sentence out. The guy shows up and does the work. You know, I call him Jelly Bucket Joe for a reason. He shows up with his jelly bucket. He's out there doing the work. And look, and here's my problem. I don't think we're talking enough about what he's actually done, especially for working people. I look at what the NLRB's done. I look at what the Department of Labor has done. I look at all of these policy pushes that are making it easier for workers to organize, making it easier for them to fight for better wage hours conditions, all this stuff. And I don't think we're talking about it enough.
No, you know, look, we're not, and we're not trying to, we depend on the campaigns to do these things, Rick, but we need to be talking about it out there too. We need to be constantly reminding people that Joe Biden has promised to build an economy from the ground up and the middle out, and that's exactly what he's doing, and that benefits workers. And he is a pro-union president. You've seen him time and time again. And what a lot of people, and I know this is a union show, and you know me, I'm a union kind of guy too. But the fact of the matter is, all of those union deals that he's pushing, all of those things help all workers, not just the union workers. It helps all workers across the board. Honda, Toyota are going to raise the wages of their employees, their non-union employees, based on the UAW agreement with the big three. You know, look, Joe Biden outmaneuvers. He has got the relationships. He's got the credibility. You know, I get so frustrated listening to all these people like Dean Phillips talking about how, you know, that he's just too old. He's this old and that. Let me tell you something. This guy's got the relationship. He's got the creds. Only Joe Biden can keep us from having a war in the Middle East that explodes across the entire world. Only Joe Biden can keep democracy and our allies intact to protect against Vladimir Putin, because of his experience, because of his credibility and relationships that he's got with so many people. And I think that folks are overlooking that, and they're looking strictly at, you know, look, people have experiences with folks who are elderly. There's no question about that. But everybody's different. This guy is not trying out to be the starting quarterback for the Philadelphia Eagles up there. He is not trying to run a marathon. He is the president of the United States, and that requires a different kind of work, a different kind of work ethic that he has, and he's got a lot of good people surrounding. So, yeah, you and I, so many people, all of your listeners, we need to be talking about it constantly, the jobs that he's brought to this country, the things that he's doing for the working people, the working men and women from one end of this country to the other.
Now, I'm sure you've seen the messaging, the new messaging shop, this blueprint group funded by Reid Hoffman, the co-founder of LinkedIn, who's saying, look, you know, Joe Biden's tactically choosing the wrong path. He's talking about jobs. He's talking about income. He's not talking about inflation because that's where people are at, you know, because everyone's got jobs now. But it's the inflation that Republicans have grabbed onto. I don't know if you saw Jason Chaffetz. He evidently bought a $90 gated community woke turkey, 100% vegetarian fed turkey, $4.99 a pound, and complaining that Joe Biden made him do it.
Yeah, I know. It's really laughable. And some of these folks, you know, look, you know, Rick, inflation is hitting everybody. And the president is talking about that. He has been talking about that, but more importantly, he's been working. Inflation has just not hit the United States of America. People, you listen to these Republicans and some of these folks, you would think that only within our borders of the continental United States, plus Alaska and Hawaii, that there's inflation. The United States has had perhaps the lowest inflation of any of the industrialized countries, the lowest, and it continues to go lower. We've actually seen prices get lower than they were, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, deflation a little bit. But the fact of the matter is, the folks got to remember that the jobs that Joe Biden has created, the increase in the wages that he's worked for so hard to try to stop that income gap, we've been able to weather inflation better than we could have ever done under any other president. And that doesn't make it any easier in the sense that people still think prices are too high, but we're working on that. But the fact is, if this economy is rolling under Joe Biden, and that's what people need to know. They've got jobs. They've got good jobs. They've got good paying jobs, and those are going to continue. Our domestic product right now is at an all-time high.
How come we don't hear that enough, though? I mean, I keep saying, you know, look, you know, things are not as bad and as dire as the Fox News and the Red Hat Brigade keep throwing out at us. Because as you pointed out, wages have gone up faster than inflation. This year, Thanksgiving is going to cost less than it did last year. You know, all of these things are pointing us in. We're going in the right direction. And yet we have a media culture, the outrage machine that just feeds us, well, Jason Chaffetz bought a $90 turkey because Joe Biden made him do it.
Yeah, and part of that outrage machine, Rick, let's just face it, is not right-wing media. It is absolutely propaganda. They want to talk about what they want to relive the 2020 election rather than the talking about prices coming down, gasoline prices coming down. They want to talk about the lie of elections being stolen instead of talking about the fact that jobs are being created, 14 million jobs since Joe Biden took office. And if the mainstream media falls into the same trap, they don't know how to deal with that. Even the mainstream media that you see will give the jobs report, but they'll always say this, but XYZ, but people still don't feel it, but there's some little twitch that they see. So everything good has one or two negatives that somebody is finding. And the fact is, you know, look, I think that the president's team is going to be really out there. People are just now, I think, going to start turning their attention toward the choices. Remember, the presidential election is still a year away, and people are they're looking at a lot of things going on. But the fact is that it's just now in the next couple of months you're going to see the choices between Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
Yeah, no, I hope you're right. I hope they do this quickly. Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with former Alabama Senator Doug Jones. Because here's the thing, Trump only surrounded himself with the very best people. Or if you asked him, as we can tell you, his former chief of staff, John Kelly, was quoted by the Washington Post saying, what's going on in the country that a single person thinks this guy would still be a good president when he said the things he said and done the things he's done? It's beyond my comprehension he has the support he has. Cassidy Hutchinson, an aide to Trump, said that I think everybody should vote for Joe Biden if they want our democracy to survive. So the very best people that Trump put in the positions of power are saying, hey, this guy's horrible. We shouldn't even be considering this. And yet all we keep hearing about is, did you hear, Doug? Joe Biden's old.
That's all they got, Rick. That's all they got right now. And again, people have those concerns. They've got those issues. And I don't fault anybody for having a concern about an 81-year-old running for president of the United States. It's a legitimate. Joe Biden has said that. But the fact is, this is going to come down to a choice. It's going to come down to a choice between the chaos and the autocracy that Donald Trump is not only just talking about, he's trying to deliver on it every day. If he gets elected, it's going to be a scary situation. Versus the experience, the credibility, the jobs, everything that Joe Biden has done. And the, you know, everybody keeps talking about, you know, well, Joe Biden's just moved to left. Joe Manchin said they just moved to left. Creating jobs is some left-wing conspiracy? I mean, it makes no sense. But when people start looking, Rick, and start comparing, those polls will turn around.
I hope so. But I'm glad you brought that up, because you know, I keep saying the calls from within the House saying that Biden is too old are the neoliberals who want to go back to before the pandemic. One of the things that I've been saying, and I believe this, and you could agree or disagree, I think that Biden's industrial policy, first time we've had an industrial policy that I know of in my lifetime, to reshore manufacturing and begin moving us back towards domestic production for domestic consumption. I think there are a lot of people who don't want that. I think there are a lot of people who don't want the tariffs on China. Probably the only thing I agreed with Donald Trump on. I think there are a lot of people who want to go back to the neoliberal years of whatever corporate America wants, corporate America gets, and screw those working people. I think Biden is moving us in, and I think he thinks his legacy is a different direction. At least I hope. I'm curious your thoughts.
No, I totally agree with that. I know that he believes his legacy is in a completely different direction. Look, this guy came up as a working class Joe, you know, and that's where his heart is. It's always been that way. This is nothing new with Joe Biden. He's been this way for a long, long time, ever since I've known him. And that's been damn near over 40 years now, actually. So with that kind of upbringing, with that kind and the experience that he's had, he is going to care about those folks. Not that he's an enemy of business. I don't think anybody should say that or think that. Not at all. He does want businesses to pay their fair share of taxes, like the working men and women of this country do, but he wants those businesses to thrive. That's why he is bringing some of this inshore, but he wants that to also filter down. That's the only part of trickle-down economics that Joe Biden wants, and that is from the boardrooms and the C-suites down to the floor of the manufacturing. That needs to come down. That's what he's been working on.
No, absolutely. And it comes back to the question I keep asking. What good is having an economy? What do you want an economy for? What are the goals of the economy? Is it to feed the handful of captains of industry and make shareholders wildly wealthy? Is it to help working people support their families and their communities? Which side are you on? I mean, and for me, it's that simple. And there can be a way for both sides to coexist. We've done it before, but I think that question has to be fundamentally answered. What good is an economy if you have a large percentage of people unable to participate, hungry at night, in poverty, dropping out of the workforce because the jobs just don't pay? What good is having that economy?
No, you're right. But you also said that you can have things. You can have thriving businesses. You can have shareholders.
Sure. Look, Doug, as a union guy, I want profitable businesses.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You want profitable business. You just want to make sure some of that comes down and that these workers can share in that success. Because at the end of the day, that's what's driving it. And that's Joe Biden's philosophy. That's where he is moving. It's what he's done from day one. Even when this economy was stalling, still in the pandemic, trying to come out of it, even when people were screaming, oh, we're going to go in a recession, we can't do this, we can't do that, he was staying the course. And look what's happened. We haven't seen that recession. We you know, it has continued to produce jobs, and our domestic product is still up. So that's, I think, been another thing that's been lost about this administration, that they had a plan, they believed in that plan, and they've stuck with it. They've not panicked. They've worked to make sure that what they did delivered for the American worker in this country,
yeah,
and for families across this country.
No, I mean, we're in this moment. I think in no other point in my lifetime, and I know we say this every election cycle, this one's the most important ever, but I think we're really in a very clear moment of which side are you on, especially when you look at the two presumptive nominees in 2024, Donald Trump and Joe Biden. You've got Donald Trump, who's, it's all about retribution. It's all about revenge. It's all about payback. We're going to bring back patronage. We're going to do all this stuff and move in a very authoritarian way. And then you got Biden, who's just, like I said, showing up, doing the work. And I think changing our economy in a way that work is rewarded. And I say this every time a new president comes into office. I hope this is the guy who returns reward to work. And I think Biden has taken that to heart.
Yeah. And the other thing about Trump that I think people have to, I do hope people are paying attention to the things he is saying about the retribution, about locking people up. This is not new. You know, remember, he said the same thing about Hillary Clinton. This is a guy who's under indictment, who's now is just a pure revenge tour. But that's a dangerous way to be. The language that he is using now, Rick, is not only anti-democratic. It's dangerous. It is dangerous for the well-being of people and their personal safety. You see it every day where workers, election workers, are getting threatened. Members of Congress getting threatened. The rhetoric and the potential for political violence is really, it's a ticking time bomb out there, I believe, if we don't try to do something and get people on both sides of the aisle to just tone that down a good bit. And it starts with people calling out Trump and his rhetoric and what he is trying to incite.
Let me ask you this. He's a former federal prosecutor. These gag orders that Trump's fighting. Are you on the side of gag orders? Because I feel uncomfortable with them. I don't like the limit speech, but I'm curious, as a former federal prosecutor, is it something they can do, something they should do? Because as you pointed out, he's saying some pretty incendiary things.
Yeah, you know, look, I'm exactly where you are. And if you notice, not a single gag order was entered initially. The presumption is that they shouldn't need a gag order. We've got free speech. But yet when you are in that position, there are certain lines that you cannot cross with regard to that free speech. You cannot threaten the court, the employees of the court. You cannot do things that put people's lives in jeopardy. And it's not just that. They're looking ahead to a potential jury that's going to be sitting in judgment as well. And so there is a place in this country. There's not only a legal place, but it's the right thing to do to protect the integrity of the system and to protect the individuals that are involved in these cases. I think you have to have them. I think that ultimately the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court will affirm some gag order with Trump. Based on his prior statements. They may tighten it up a little bit and not be very broad and make it about specific threats or comments about individuals, not about the case itself.
Right.
I just think that that's where it's going to go. And I think it's needed in this case, quite frankly.
I see it the other way. I see they're going to put that on there and he's immediately going to break that to push the envelope, because that's what he does. He wants to be the martyr. He wants his supporters to believe he's the martyr.
I didn't say that he wouldn't break it. What I said was that the court may narrow it a little
right.
bit and make it very specific. Which, by the way, is the best thing that could happen, because if he did break a very narrow order, it's going to be clear. There won't be any question about it. And there will be consequences. There is no question there will be. In my mind, there will be consequences.
Before I let you go, we saw just the other day the passing of Rosalynn Carter. I wanted to get your thoughts on her passing. And, you know, like unfortunately, I keep watching the moments going by to see when President Carter goes as well, because, you know, we've seen those stories when one goes, the other follows. But I wanted to get your thoughts before the Thanksgiving break.
She was a magnificent lady. She was she really transformed the position or office of First Lady by being a partner with President Carter, by being an advocate for mental health and so many other things. I think that and being right there at his side, not only through his political career, but in his post-political career, doing those incredible things for humanity. And that's what both Rosalynn Carter and Jimmy Carter, I think, are going to be remembered for. They're just basic decency and humanity and care for their neighbors. And if we had more like that, Rick, what a wonderful place this would be.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. But Doug, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much, as always. Have a great holiday. I look forward to having you back again real soon.
You too, buddy. Take care.
Thanks so much. Our good friend Doug Jones. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1945. That was the day that 320,000 United Auto Workers went out on strike against General Motors. The strike was part of a wave of work actions that washed over the country after World War II. Workers were growing more and more frustrated that company profits were soaring while workers' wages remained stagnant. During the war, most unions had abided by no strike pledges. But once the war was over, workers wanted their fair share of the growing American economy. In just 1 year, 5 million workers participated in more than 4,500 strikes. The GM strikers demanded a 30% pay increase. Walter Reuther, president of the UAW, also insisted that the company could meet this demand without raising the prices of their vehicles. He asked the company to open their books so workers and the public could see the full details of the company's profits. GM refused. They characterized Reuther as a socialist for even making such an outrageous request. During negotiations, Harry Cohen, the GM assistant director of personnel, told President Reuther, quote, "Why don't you get down to your size and get down to the type of job you're supposed to be doing as a trade union leader and talk about money you would like to have for your people and let the labor statesmanship go to hell for a while." The GM strike lasted 113 days. The workers won a 17.5% pay increase and improvements to vacation and overtime. But they did not get to look at GM's books or gain any say on how GM vehicles were priced. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
You know, as I said, we're in this moment. Which side are you on? Are you on the side of someone who does want to bring, you know, retribution and revenge and patronage and all of the horrible things of the past right front and center and destroy democracy? Or do you want somebody who's been showing up doing the work? And as I've been telling my working class friends, the reality is you got no better friend right now than Joe Biden in that White House. He is taking on the legacy of the last 40 plus years of neoliberalism. And I'm thrilled with where we've gone so far. Is there more to be done? Absolutely, without question. And probably the first person to tell you that would be Joe Biden. Let's quick go to the phones. Got Alice on line one. Alice, what's on your mind?
Couple of things. First off, if you're paying $4.99 for a turkey, and then you're going to complain about it, then you're just a flat-out twit. Frankly, I buy mine when they go on sale at Shop and Save or Giant Eagle or whatever. So, you know, it's just something to cause an issue about.
Yeah, no, no. You gated community woke turkey. Not all of us have access. We can't even find those in my neighborhood.
Well, I don't think we have them in mine either, you know. Like I said, you've got to be a little bit like Dr. Oz. You know, gee, look what I did. I'm so high and mighty, I did this. So, you know, but hey, that's the uppity Republicans for you. And the second thing I wanted to say was, so Joe Biden just turned 81. My dad passed away when he was 84, and he passed away from multiple myeloma. It had come back, and he was dead within like 4 months. But until he was 83 years old, he was out putting up hay, building fences, and everything else. So it doesn't bother me that Joe Biden is 81 years old. He's energetic. He's getting the job done. And let's face it, Trump might be a few years younger, but he's decades more senile. But y'all have a happy Thanksgiving.
You as well, Alice. I appreciate it. Thanks so much. No, I mean, look, the reality is he, you know, he's old. And I'll be the first to admit that. And he does struggle, you know, speaking. And I do, too. I just stuttered there a little bit myself. I do find it interesting that our right-wing media has a major problem with that. Because they know they can mock it. And as I said yesterday, it's one of those things that makes me think back to the FDR years. You know, what would they have said about FDR? What kind of horrible, evil, mean-spirited, what kind of stuff would come out of their headlines about someone like the FDR? And you think about what he was able to do for this country and the policies that he moved forward on. I know, they're all policies that Republicans hate. Yes, you're right. You're right. It's all policies that Republicans want to destroy and have been working to destroy. Yeah, bad example. Bad example. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So I got a number of emails during the break asking me where they can find the community, the gated community woke turkey. 100% vegetarian fed. And like I said, from inception, bottle fed, cuddle warmed, nice bed of, this is the turkey, mind you. You know, I was going to say breastfed, but that's a bit too far even for me to go. But you know, this is what Jason Chaffetz is throwing out there. He spent $90 on a turkey. And you know why? Because Joe Biden made him do it. It's all Joe Biden's fault. And did you hear he's old? Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the Thanksgiving meal, how much it's going to cost, and is it Joe Biden's fault? I've asked Brandon Duke to come talk with us. He's a senior director of economic policy at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website. Brendan, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick.
So let's start with Jason Chaffetz, former Iowa Republican congressman who bailed on Congress to go to Fox News and now needs to continue the outrage candy to throw it out there. He spent $90 on a gated community woke turkey, tweeted out a picture of said turkey, $4.99 a pound, 100% vegetarian, you know, grass-fed, you know, sustainably done on small family farms. This is great stuff. I wish he would pursue those policies, but it's Joe Biden's fault.
Well, you know, I think a Fox News salary goes pretty far, as you can tell. And, you know, I think if there's one person benefiting from the strong economy right now, it seems like it's Jason Chaffetz, who's able to go out and, you know, spend that kind of money on a turkey.
Point well taken. Who can afford a gated community woke turkey other than what was that saying that Harry Truman used to say? If you want to live like a Republican, vote for Democrats. Here we go.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I mean, I think people can come up with all sorts of numbers and tweet out whatever they want. But, you know, I think the American Farm Bureau, which is a group of farmers who just look up the cost of turkeys and cranberries and all the fixins for a typical Thanksgiving dinner, you know, they went across the country and total up the cost every year. And it's amazing. This year they found that the cost of a classic Thanksgiving dinner, so that's turkey, pumpkin pie, cranberries, some greens that nobody will eat, the whole thing. That went down, that went from $64 last year to $61 this year. And that's pretty astounding because actually, you know, most years costs go up, but actually over the last year, we've managed to see costs go down, which is a very big deal. And, you know, I wish, you know, Jason Chaffetz was out tweeting about that fact, but I guess he's not. And, you know, I think an important point too is that actually the Thanksgiving dinner this year is actually more affordable than it was before the pandemic. And the way to think about that is that how much it costs as a fraction of a worker's earnings is lower than it was in 2017 or 2018. So, you know, just your, you know, lunch pail Joe who's buying, you know, classic Thanksgiving dinner, according to statistics, actually can get more, can get, you know, more greens that he's not going to eat, more cranberries than he could have, you know, back 5-6 years ago.
But that's not what I hear on the F channel. That's not what the, that's not what I'm being told. Are you telling me that they're lying to me?
I mean, you know, I don't know what the grocery stores in Greenwich, Connecticut or the Upper East Side of Manhattan are, you know, I don't know what those prices are, but when the good folks at the American Farm Bureau went across the country and, you know, went, you know, to communities outside Pittsburgh and, you know, in Dayton and, you know, all across the country to see, you know, what real Americans are paying for Thanksgiving, they said they found that, you know, the price went down.
Now, the American Farm Bureau, these aren't a bunch of hippie liberals. These aren't the people who, they're not the ones out there promoting the gated community woke turkeys, are they?
No, not at all. In fact, you know, I've worked in tax policy a lot and fought them a lot on the estate tax. So, you know, it's certainly, you know, this is not a Democratic leaning group. This is, you know, one of the premier trade associations for farmers, you know, who, you know, participate, you know, in the organization. So, you know, this is definitely not some left-wing group. This is about as, you know, rock rib, you know, I guess, you know, whatever political affiliation you want to guess farmers are.
Yeah, no, but, you know, this is the thing that gets me because all the messaging I'm hearing is, you know, Joe Biden's destroying Thanksgiving, Brendan. I'm sure you've heard. Not only is Joe Biden old, but he's personally destroying Thanksgiving. That's the message. That's all I'm getting. But I'm not getting anything of, hey, here's what we would do differently. And this is the part that gets me. Now, Bob Casey has a report out. He's got two of them now, two greedflation reports. But this latest one, stuffing their pockets, how big food and agriculture businesses are making your holiday meals more expensive. He points out how mass consolidation and, of course, you know, corporations doing what they can, raising prices for absolutely no reason to line their pockets, are what's really causing the increase in costs and screwing us. In fact, he pointed out, you know, in my state of Pennsylvania that, you know, it's like $3,500 increase costs due to, you know, this kind of gouging for the average Pennsylvania consumer in 22. I think it was $3,200 in 21. Oh, that's a lot of money coming out of people's pockets, right into the pockets of shareholders and CEOs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think that makes, you know, what we've seen over the last year, the costs going down, all the more impressive that, you know, we do have this corporate consolidation. We do have, you know, price fixing in all of these sectors. And, you know, they've managed to get the cost to go down, and we're seeing wages rise despite all of that. And, you know, it'd be interesting to look at. I haven't looked at how the president's, you know, work on competition interacts with that, you know, whether, you know, in some ways it's kind of getting companies to ease up on this. But, you know, I do think it's just important to note that despite all of this, despite all of these trends that, you know, cause prices to go up, we're seeing prices go down, and, you know, the cost of Thanksgiving dinner is more affordable this year than it was 6 years ago.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Brendan Duke. He's a senior director of economic policy at the Center for American Progress, AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at their work. Now, I've been calling for, you know, I was fortunate enough to be in Buffalo when the Broncos played the Bills on Monday night last week. And we stopped by the inaugural site of Teddy Roosevelt, which was fabulous. If you're ever in Buffalo, by all means, stop there. It's a really good educational thing. But I keep saying, you know, who's going to be this generation's Teddy Roosevelt? Who's going to be the guy? Maybe it's Bob Casey. I don't know, because I love these reports. I think every Democratic senator should be putting these things out. But who's going to be the person who goes up and busts some of this stuff up? Because I think the message out of all of this inflation is there really isn't competition in the market. We've got a handful of companies that control virtually every industry in this country. And sadly, it's getting worse. So for me, that's the question. Who's going to be today's TR?
I mean, look, I think you've seen the Biden administration take on a lot of this stuff. Obviously, you know, there's still more stuff they can do. But, you know, I think they've really called attention to this whole junk fee issue where, you know, you go online and, you know, it says that the hotel will be $100 a night. And then all of a sudden there's a $20 resort fee for no reason. It's not like you're doing anything. You're just using the freaking hotel. And, you know, that's what you're getting charged for, cracking down on that. So, you know, I think all across the board, banking fees, you know, trying to hit the cost of insulin. So, you know, I think there's a lot of areas here. You know, there's certainly more they can do, but I think the administration's been very aggressive in attacking this. You've seen how they've gone after the airlines. You know, when the airlines have done stuff they shouldn't be doing, we actually see the price of air travel this year is double digits percentage lower than it was last year. Which I think is another metric by which, you know, Thanksgiving is more affordable. You know, I'm from California, but I live in D.C. And for someone like me, the, you know, the real cost of Thanksgiving isn't the turkey, it's the flight, right? And, you know, that cost going down is a huge deal for Americans. Price of gas is lower than it was last year. So obviously, you know, folks who are, you know, just going a couple states over, that's a huge deal, too. So, you know, I do think that, you know, on a bunch of metrics, Thanksgiving is more affordable this year than it was last year, in addition to people actually making more money this year than they did last year.
And that's the thing I don't think we're hearing enough about. You know, wages are outpacing inflation, and that's what we want. We want to make sure that, you know, and this is where I come back to, if we had stronger unions, we had more people in unions, we had more people working with contracts that have cost of living adjustments because of inflation, this wouldn't be as big of a problem. And I go back to my grandparents' generation, you know, in the 70s, when we had that hyperinflation, that stagflation that gripped us, you know, there were years my grandfather got multiple raises because inflation was above the number to trigger that cost of living adjustment. So by, you know, the 1960s, they bought their house. By the end of the 70s, a day's pay was their mortgage because their wages had kept up.
Sure.
And sadly, we don't have that labor. We don't have our grandparents' labor movement.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, again, in some ways, it's a little bit like when we're talking about competition, where, you know, I think it's important to know, since, you know, January 2020, so the month before the pandemic really started, prices have gone up 19%, which has been a huge pain for American families. But wages went up 22% over that period. So prices go up 19%, wages go up 22%, which leaves, you know, a typical American worker better off. Now, not all of them, you know, nobody's always the average. But, you know, I think that leaves them better off. Now, I think what's amazing about that is we did that without the strong labor movement, without, you know, without actually raising the federal minimum wage, without those basic steps. But by engineering, you know, this tight labor market, you know, the Biden administration was really able to kickstart that wage growth that I think is paying huge dividends. And I think Americans are really starting to begin to pick up on now. And I think those are steps that, you know, they are taking, that we are seeing the labor movement more invigorated than it has been in a good long while. You know, we've been seeing this with the UAW contract, with the UPS contract, with Amazon organizing, with all of these steps. So, you know, I do think that, you know, the Biden administration has played a key role in getting those wages going by, you know, taking us out of those depths of that really terrible economy that he inherited in January of 2021 and getting us this really dynamic economy. And that next step is, you know, thinking about, you know, more structural ways to raise wages, such as giving us the first federal minimum wage increase that we've had in 17 years. Something like that would be a huge deal, you know, for American families.
Now, you said wages went up more than inflation, but you listen to the average person, you know, they're you'd think the sky was falling. So in that distribution, because you said it's on average, Where did that go? Who saw the bigger wage gains? I've seen reports that say, you know, the people at the bottom saw the biggest boosts, which, you know, helped our social programs because we're not putting out as much food stamps and that kind of stuff. So we're finally getting employers at the bottom paying. But did the middle see much, or did it go between the bottom and the top? Any thoughts?
It was bottom out economics. So, you know, it's the opposite of trickle down, where essentially the lower in the wage distribution you were, the better off you did. You know, which is great. You right. know, had a lot of great benefits, and you know, I think, you know, so I mean, it's been a huge deal. It's made a huge difference in the lives of, you know, cashiers, home health aides, you know, the people who really do the hard work behind this country, and the people whose pay growth has been lagging the most have been people at the very top. And that's why you see tech people on Twitter complaining all of the time about the economy, how, you know, the sky is always falling, that sort of thing. That may actually be true for people who are used to making $1 million a year. Most Americans aren't in that, you know, aren't in that zone. And
in that rarefied air.
Not used to an economy.
Right.
We're not used to an economy where I think that we're not used to an economy that works better for cashiers and home health aides than it does for, you know, portfolio managers at hedge funds.
Right. You see, the reason I ask that is because, you know, I keep coming back to what the Republican response to fixing inflation is. And as you've pointed out, the people at the bottom have seen the gains. You put money in the people at the bottom's pockets, they're going to spend it, and they're going to spend all of it. And it's going to reverberate through the local economy and have a snowball effect. They, I believe, want to crush that because that's where the inflation is. Giving those poor people the ability to pay their bills, evidently can't have that.
I mean, look, I think. Some of it is a reaction in that way, that you do have business owners who are annoyed that they have to raise wages and attract workers and, you know, do all those sorts of things compared to the economy we had 10 years ago, where it was a lot easier to be a business owner.
Yeah, it was a lot easier to exploit workers back then. Ah, the good old days.
Yeah, exactly. If you were running a restaurant, you could get a cashier with a graduate degree. Seems great to me if you're the business owner, you know, but doesn't seem that great if you're the worker. So I think, you know, we're just seeing a reaction of people just not used to, you know, paying workers a decent wage, and now they have to, and, you know, they're complaining.
And this is another one of those moments where I go, never in my lifetime has it been clearer which side a working person should be on. The political divides, in my view, and you can agree or disagree, have never been clearer than the moment we're in right now. And you know, for me, the path that we're on, where we're heading, is the right direction where we should be continuing. I think Jelly Bucket Joe's been doing a great job in moving us in that direction. I fear that in the next year, because of, you know, Joe Biden ruined turkeys, that people are going to make the wrong choice, and we're going to head back to, well, the pre-pandemic days.
I mean, all I'll say to that is that, you know, I think, you know, when we get an inflation report or the unemployment report, you know, the stock market and the financial markets, they react within milliseconds. That's what they do. Americans do not have the time to pay attention to those sorts of things. I think their realization about how things are going, you know, happens a little bit slower. And so I think, you know, we have another year, and I think, you know, we're going to see people start to reverberate, that they start realizing that gas hasn't been going up. You know, they start realizing that their wages are rising. So I think there's just a really important, you know, dynamic that, you know, I think in today's Twitter age and social media and, you know, with financial markets, we're just expecting everybody to react to things extremely quickly, where, you know, most Americans, you know, they just only think about their finances, you know, they only really think systematically about their finances a few times a year. So, you know, I think that we're really going to start to see that stuff, you know, the realization about what a strong economy we're in, pick up, you know, over the next few months.
There you go. Brendan, I appreciate you taking time for us. Have a great holiday. I look forward to talking to you again down the road.
You too. Thanks for having me on, Rick.
Thanks so much, Brendan Duke. He is the Senior Director of Economic Policy there at the Center for American Progress. AmericanProgress.org, the website, if you want to take a look at their work. Highly, highly suggested. Quick break. Right back. Stick around.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425. Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Gotta tell you know, again, in talking with Brendan, you know, the reality is yeah, prices are coming down. And he brought up the ticket thing. He brought up the junk fees. And as I said, I went to the Bronco Bills game, and the fees were just outrageous on Ticketmaster because you can't buy tickets anywhere else. There's literally no place for you to buy any tickets other through these through Ticketmaster. That's literally a monopoly. And the Live Nation CEO, and I guess the Live Nation owns all of this, the CEO makes, what was it, like 5,100 times that of the average worker? 5,100 times. And you go, how is that possible? It's possible because every time you want to go to a sporting event, a concert, anything where there's a ticket involved, you're paying him. How come we don't hear that kind of gouging inflation and hear anger over that? And look, the Biden folks are trying. They're trying. And not getting any credit for it from the corporate media, which again is why programs like ours, I think, is so very important. Great story coming out of Sweden. Evidently, the port of Malmo on September 7th, you had a ship come in where dock workers refused to take anything from Tesla off of the ship. Now, understand, you know, Tesla and the workers there at IF Metall, they've been kind of in a labor dispute. The workers want to organize, and the Tesla's being like they are here in this country. You now have solidarity sympathy strikes going on where dock workers aren't taking anything off of boats. Electricians won't repair any of the chargers. You got cleaning companies who won't come in and clean the buildings. Now, as of yesterday, The postal union, the postal workers, they're not delivering mail or packages. That's what solidarity looks like. That's the kind of stuff that working people have got to come back around to. To me, it's that simple. Let's quick go to the phones. I've got Jack on line one. Jack, how are you today?
Just peachy, as my granny used to say. And thanks for taking my call. I've got a comment or two regarding inflation. A recent article in Business Insider and also in the Wall Street Journal pointed out roughly 2/3 of the so-called inflation caused by corporate price gouging.
Yep.
And according to recent Harvard Business Journal studies, among other things, corporate profits are at record highs. Gee, what a surprise. The solution to this is exactly what you say, I think, is, you know, we have to get people who are actually working together into unions, and they have to be able to actually be recognized and be allowed to work. The government so far under Joe Biden has been very helpful. The previous administration, shall we say, it was less than helpful. So that's at least one of the solutions to the problem.
Yep, I agree.
I'm not sure that we can do anything from a other legislative standpoint.
I think we're paralyzed to do anything legislatively, but I think we have to. I go back to, we've got to start breaking up some of these monopolies in these industries where a handful of companies control all the cereal being made and all the chicken being produced and all the pork being produced and potatoes. Go down the list. There are a handful of companies in every industry where there's no real competition. And for me, that's a serious problem.
Yeah, the only way to actually have prices under some kind of market control is to have real competition.
Yep.
And as you pointed out, there's a thing called a de facto monopoly, and I'm not an economist, far from it, but the principle I understand is basically that a few corporations control something like 75, 80, 90% of the market. And whether you look at the refiners for fuel or the airline industry or food corporations, you're seeing it all over the place. Sometime after my daddy died, he left me with a bunch of Standard Oil stock, and all of a sudden, Standard Oil was broken up. And I think some of that has to be done today.
Now, I'm with you. Appreciate the thoughts, Jack. Thanks so much, buddy. As always, good stuff. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. You got a question, comment, something on your mind? I want to hear it. Also, miss any portion of the program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcast, we will be there. Make sure you subscribe. Never miss a moment. Got to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, you know, as we've been talking about, you know, strikes work, organizing works, threats of strikes work too. And those are my favorite ones. When you threaten to go on strike and things work out well, that's kind of where you want to be. And I know my friends out at the Culinary Union out in Las Vegas, they've been doing a lot of that, saying, look, one job should be enough. We should be able to support our families with one income and not just exist, but the old bread and roses, bread, yes, but roses too mentality. Right now, the Culinary Union's hosting their ratification vote for what they're calling the best contract ever with MGM Resorts, Caesar Entertainment, and Wynn Resorts. And here to share some thoughts on, well, if this is the best ever, and how this could go, I've asked Cherie Evans Earle to come talk with us. She's a Mandalay Bay Casino cocktail server, also a member of the Culinary Union, Local 226 out there in Vegas for the past 20 years. Cherie, thanks for taking time for us. So walk me through, what's going on? What are you doing right now? Fill me in. And we have lost her. I have no volume, Cherie. I'm sorry. Somehow this just didn't happen. Can we hit the button? Evidently no volume. All right. I guess we're going to move along. Evidently we're having a little screw up, and this is what happens when you do the whole live radio thing. But Cherie, I appreciate the effort. We'll give it a try again down the road. But as they pointed out, look, there's a ratification vote going on, and I hope for their sake that, you know, this contract is everything that they need from it. That one income will be enough to support a family, and this is what we've been talking about for a while. This idea that, you know, inflation is what the Republicans want us to focus on. You know, look at the cost of the turkey is $4.99 a pound for the 100% vegetarian raised, grass fed, free range turkey. But they don't want you to talk about the victories that are happening in the workplace. And I've said for a very long time, if you want to reunite this country, which my Republican friends don't want us to do, But if you truly wanted to reunite this country, if you truly wanted to bring us back together and create an economy that works for everybody, you organize, you unionize, you give people the opportunity to fight for better wages, hours, conditions. You give people the opportunity to say, you know what? My work matters. My work is worth more than, you know, think about what a waitress makes or a waiter made or makes today. I mean, the minimum wage for a waiter in this state of my state of Pennsylvania is like $2.94 an hour. Now they have to, with tips and with everything else, have to get up to the whopping family sustaining rate of $7.25 an hour, which again, I have no idea how anyone survives on that, but that's the law. The only way you raise that above the law is by saying, you know what? We demand better. And through collective action and collective bargaining, you demand. And this is what the culinary union out in Vegas has been showing us. They were threatening to shut the whole place down. And this is, I go back to one of those things where you go, at some point, you have to do the only thing that working people can do. And that's withhold your labor. Fold your arms, march your feet. And look, nobody wants to be on strike. Nobody wants to go through the kind of you know, struggle and sacrifice that comes along with a strike. Ask some of the UAW folks who have fought for it. People want to go to work. They want to support their families. They want to live their lives. But sometimes you get pushed into a corner. And I look at, as I talked about in the last segment, you got these striking workers, these workers in Sweden who work for Tesla, who've been fighting this behemoth company for a long time. I guess it's been like 6 years now that they've been, you know, in this escalating dispute with IF Metall, to where finally the workers have said, you know what? No more. We're not going to allow it. We're not going to stand for it anymore. We're not touching anything with Tesla's name on it. From the people who unload the ships, to the people who fix the charging stations, the people who now deliver the mail. Nope. You're out. Now understand, here in this country, all of that's illegal. Even if we wanted to have solidarity boycotts and sympathy strikes, it's highly illegal. You'd be fired, unions would be decertified, you'd be sued out of existence, because that's how the corporations want it. They want working people neutered. They want people desperate and pliable, just happy to have a job. And the thing that gets me is, when we had 35% union density in this country, it was a lot easier for working people to support one another and say, you know what? Yeah, I may not benefit from your strike directly, but I'm going to support you. And we've seen this throughout our labor history, where people have come forth, the communities have come out in support. And as I say all the time, the bigger the strike line, the shorter the strike. The more people who are active and engaged, the more people who are involved, the better it is for all of us. And it comes back to that old labor frame. Which side are you on? Are you on the side of the well-to-do, the investor class, the moneyed interest? Or are you on the side of the labor force, the working people? This is the constant in an ever-changing world. The war between labor and capital. The war between people who hoard money and those who have to work for it. Those who move money from one pocket to the other and get richer, and those who have to feed their kids and support their families. To me, it's that simple. And it goes back to my eighth grade government teacher. When asked, you know, well, which we don't know anything about the parties, which side do you choose? And his answer was you know, quite interesting. He said, well, you have to probably decide, you know, which side, you know, of the coin you're on. Are you on the side of Republicans who want to enrich the wealthy and corporations and strengthen corporate power and the power of the wealth? Of the wealthy, or do you want to be on the side of the Democrats who want to have big government programs to help the poor and the downtrodden, the sick and all that? Which side would you, because look, you in the middle are going to pay for both. So which side are you closer to? Are you closer to being someone who's very wealthy and would take advantage of all of the deregulation, the tax breaks and all this stuff that they were really putting out in the early 80s? Or, you know, the great society programs, you know, taking care of those lazy people, of which, you know, growing up, I guess I would have been categorized as, because my mother, we were on and off welfare a number of times. We were on and off food stamp, you know, numerous times. We lived in a housing project. If it weren't for a lot of those social programs, I don't know where I would have been. When my mother passed, we were able to collect Social Security death benefit, which allowed my grandparents to take me in and get me to 18 and give me the opportunity to go out and be a productive member of society. And, oh, by the way, pay all of that back. And I would argue with interest through the taxes that I've paid over the years. Kind of an investment in me. And that's how I see it. So, you know, when that question came up, which side are you on? Clearly, I'm on the side of helping people who are struggling, giving them a helping hand. And I may be a little more in the we should be helping more category than a lot of people, because I see how these programs are set up not only to pigeonhole you in that situation, but not really to help you up. They're meant to keep you right where you are. Because you know what? If you dare go get a job, that's going to pay you just a little bit more. We're going to start taking away. So does your life get any better? And the answer is no. You stay right where you are. Wages haven't gone up. So 7 1/4 job or collecting food stamps and being able to take care of your kids at home, because you can't afford childcare on 7 1/4. So for me, I fell on the side of I would prefer to have a government that is more active in helping people's lives get better than deregulating and allowing the invisible hand to give us the invisible finger. So when I see these stories of workers in other countries showing incredible signs of solidarity, I go, we should be doing that here. When the UAW was on strike, you did. You saw union members flocking to those picket lines. You saw community members flocking to those picket lines. When we were there, there were people from various unions. There were people from the town there to support them on a Saturday morning. This is where our fight is. This is where our reality should be. And this is where we should just be going, look, if we're going to reunite this country, we reunite around wages, hours, conditions, opportunities, investments. We fight on the things that matter to working people. It's the economy, stupid, to steal the James Carville frame. It's always been the economy, stupid. All of the fringe stuff, all of the stuff, the outlier stuff, all of the stuff that's thrown out there to keep us pitted against each other and yelling at each other in the streets. To me, that stuff's immaterial on the grand scheme. You want to bring people together. You want to organize a society. You do it in the workplace. Because again, all of those problems that we see being yelled at each other in the streets, the workplace seemed to work it out pretty well. So I'm a little bit more in that vein. It's a shame that we couldn't get Sheree on. I really wanted to hear more about what the contract had to offer. From what I've read, they did really well. And again, this is the kind of moment that we're in, where you know these contracts, these people are getting raises and benefits and increases that you know. Just don't come because of the benevolency of corporate America. Just doesn't happen. In fact, you know, I was just reading through some of the numbers that the Culinary Union put out. And look, they're saying this is the best ever. In the first year, there's going to be a 10% increase for every worker in the first year and a total of 32% increase in wages over the life of the contract. That's a pretty big thing. They say, you know, under the previous contract, the end of the new 5-year contract, the average Culinary Union member will be earning $35 an hour with benefits. That's a pretty good thing. Now remember, these casinos, they're making billions. This is just a drop in the bucket for them, and it comes down to they can share. They just don't want to. They can pay a living wage. They just don't want to. They have to be forced. And that's what this is about. This is about working people standing together and saying, we demand better. We're worth better. We're worth more. Our families are better than this. And then, if necessary, take him to the streets. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Gonna take a quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1831. That was the day that silk workers went on strike in Lyon, France. It was one of several strikes known as the Canut Revolts. Canut was a term used to describe Lyonese silk workers. During this time, the textile industry was the main source of jobs in Lyon. Half of the working population of Lyon made their living at silk weaving. Silk was decentralized during this pre-industrial era. 1,000-plus bankers and traders controlled and financed the manufacturing and sale of silk goods. These manufacturers contracted 8,000 chief weaving craftsmen known as the Canuts. The craftsmen were paid for a specific order or by the piece. Canuts owned their own looms. These craftsmen, in turn, employed 30,000 apprentices. These workers were paid by the day and usually lived with their craftsmen employers. Women were also employed, but at a lesser salary. In 1831, a downturn in the economy caused a drop in silk prices and a lowering of workers' wages. As a result, workers tried to get a minimum price imposed on silk. When their demands were refused, the workers seized a local arsenal. The insurgents took over Lyon after a bloody battle with the local military. There were 600 casualties and 100 deaths. The French government sent in a veteran of the Napoleonic Wars with an army of 20,000 to restore order. Faced with this force, the workers gave in without any more bloodshed. Some workers were arrested, but eventually acquitted. The minimum price for silk was abolished, and the revolt unsuccessful. Like what you hear? Check out more at laborhistoryin2.com. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. So, hey, Christian Sharia law right around the corner. And I've been saying this for a long time. Get ready for it. Republicans are hell-bent on it. And what I love hearing is my freedom-loving red hats telling me how Joe Biden's destroying their freedoms, stealing their freedom from them. And oddly enough, maybe they should be listening from the screams coming inside their own camps. Because I'm sure you saw the Mike Johnson thing. I guess it was about, from the way the story goes, it was a year ago the Supreme Court had a decision that was that struck down restrictions on the use of contraceptions, and it barred bans on gay sex and legalized same-sex marriages and all this stuff. And Mike Johnson was all in favor of the Supreme Court, you know, striking all that down. And he said, quote, one of the primary purposes of the law in civil government is to restrain evil. We have to acknowledge, he said, collectively that man is inherently evil and needs to be restrained. Now, I find that interesting when you couple that with the story that evidently he and his son are using this Covenant Eyes app, which is an anti-porn phone app that they spy on each other through this Covenant Eyes app. I guess what it does is it takes screenshots of whatever it is that you're looking at every couple of seconds, every couple of minutes, whatever it does, and then sends it to the other person, you know, kind of to keep you honest. And it made me think of, you know, generally this is stuff that addicts do. You know, when people have an addiction, they need a sponsor, they need someone to keep them on the straight and narrow. So I'm going, you know, is Mike Johnson, you know, got a problem maybe? Wants the kid to keep him on the straight and narrow? I don't know. But there are some who are saying, hey, is it a good thing that you have this private corporation taking screenshots of the speaker's phone on a non-government server? Could that not be something of, security risk? Outside of the fact that it's kind of weird and controlling, it does send an interesting message for me. And this is the part that I come back to, as I've been saying for a very long time. The evangelicals, the Christian right, these are people who are zealots. These are people who want, you know, not just democracy or fascism. They want a theocracy. They want, you know, they want rule of their God, not anyone else's, but their narrowly defined, angry, vengeful God. The one who punishes, retribution, eye for an eye. Or Harry Palm for Harry Palm. I don't know. He's got the app. Who knows? But, you know, it's one of these things where I've been saying for a while that the Christian right, that the extreme, the theocratic right, they want to bring a Christian version of Sharia law here, which, again, puts women back in the kitchen, barefoot and pregnant, gays back in the closet and useful only in the dark eras and the dark recesses of their repression. And, you know, blacks and minorities back in the field doing menial labor. This is their view. This is their vision. This is what they want for America. They're not shy about it because they're true believers. And this is the scariest thing, that you got a guy who seems reasonable. He seems like a nice, seems like you'd like to have him as a neighbor, but with some really dark, horrible policies. And as I've been saying for a while, you know, when they were talking about, you know, overturning Roe, I said, Griswold's not far behind. Contraception will be the next thing to go, the next thing that they're after. And surprise, 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 it's what they're talking about. Because again, it's not about how much they love the babies. They don't care about the babies. They give to you know what's. Because look at what they do when they have a chance to support children. Look at what they do when they have a chance to feed them and educate them and get them health care. They destroy all that. There's nothing there. Oh, I know. But Rick, we're going to let the churches do it. Well, if that would have worked, because I've had a couple of thousand years to do it, we'd be doing it. Sadly, not. And when I look at someone like Joel Osteen, who is like the supposedly the poster child of religiosity, who pays himself $54 million a year, lives in a gigantic mansion while people all around him are going hungry. And oh, by the way, when Houston was flooding, locked the doors and barricaded the quote unquote arena church so no one could get in, which was on higher ground. You know, a real Christian thing to do. So I'm telling you, I'm curious where we're going to end up. I hate to say fearful, because I'm hoping that people wake up to the reality that religious extremists are beginning to control large portions of our government. The Speaker of the House, two heartbeats away from being the president. That's a pretty big deal. So when I hear people say Joe Biden's ruining democracy and ruining Thanksgiving, I go, have you looked inside your own house? Now, interestingly enough, Forbes Media Group was up for sale. And this is one of those things that just makes me go, you can't make this stuff up. It was an $800 million to buy the Forbes Media Group. There were a group of investors led by this tech executive, Austin Russell, the 28-year-old founder of Luminar. Evidently, again, can't make this up. I know, it's fake news, Rick. Evidently, it has collapsed because there were, you know, massive concerns of connections to Russia and other foreign influences. So yeah, the people who hate us, we're going to buy a large media group here in the country. And only we would do something this dumb. We have Chinese companies who own a big portion of our food supply. We got Russians, you know, Russian TV was on. We've got foreign influences in our media. Yeah, yeah. And do you think they're going to be fair and balanced? Do you think they're going to be judicious in their coverage of how, you know, Joe Biden's old? I'm sure you've heard of it. Do you think they're going to be fair and balanced on what the interests of this country are? No, they're going to play the default line. They're going to divide us even farther because that not only does it sell, it's good for their special interests. If they can destroy us from within using our own tools to do it, what a win for them. And you got someone like Donald Trump who's out there, you know, just kind of pushing the message. And I got to wonder, we're seeing a lot of people resigning from Congress. You got this Bill Johnson guy who evidently is leaving. He's going to be, I guess he's going to become the president of Youngstown State. He was the guy we didn't hear much from until the East Palestine train explosion, which we don't hear anything about anymore, do we? Odd how we don't hear about the after effects and how that community is getting screwed over because it's just not sexy. It doesn't say Joe Biden's old, which is the main, and he ruined Thanksgiving. I'm sure you've heard. But he's stepping down and a bunch of people are stepping down. And there's part of me that goes, one, they know there's anger coming, or two, they just realize that they're horribly dysfunctional and aren't going to be able to do anything. And they're just going to cash in while they can. And where does that leave the rest of us? This is where I keep coming back to. And the one thing that I'm hopeful for in the new year is maybe, especially as the labor movement gets a little bit more muscular, a little bit more militant, a little bit more demanding, is that we organize ourselves. We realize that this is a country of, for, and by we the people, and that our government works in our interests because it is our government. Not that of the special interest, not that of the big money, but ours. And maybe when we realize that it is ours, maybe, and I'm hoping this is where, again, the eternal optimist in me says that maybe we start fighting on the right issues. Maybe we start becoming a country that says maybe we do need to feed children and feed the hungry and help homeless veterans and do all of those things that the high-minded part of us wants to do, instead of constantly being fed the outrage candy. I want to hear your thoughts. I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving. We will be back after the Thanksgiving break. But I hope you spend time with your families and have a great time. Thanks for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at rick@thericksmithshow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big money at Menards. Add comfort to your life with Menards' great selection of Serta mattresses. Find the perfect mattress that fits your size and firmness needs. Hurry in today and pick up a Serta gel memory foam mattress in a box on sale now through May 27. Take control of your comfort with Serta mattresses at Menards. And check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save.